I like her because in some ways she's a lot like me, in other ways she's the opposite. But yeah. Anyway, we're good.
I'm sure we will hear good things from Carol.
Well, I like Anne partly because she's blunt, and a lot of my friends are blunt because I'd rather know what's going on than not. And but I don't want to be mean, blunt, just like she said, direct. So, yeah. Anyway, Anne did ask me to talk about menopause, and I went, oh, goody, let's talk about that. That's the subject that everybody wants to talk about. In fact, you said there's hardly any. Has anybody been to a meeting that anybody talked about it? No. In fact, my mother was lost, and I remember when I did go through it, I was shocked because I didn't hardly know anything about it. You know, you're going through taking care of your kids and raising your kids, and I homeschooled and all that, and then this thing just kind of, I know it probably wasn't sudden, but I didn't realize it was coming on me, you know, and when it did, I went into shock. But I'm not going to talk about that yet.
Yes.
That's for the end, the grand finale. That sounds like your life is ending, but it's not. I thought it was, but it wasn't. Okay, so we're going to go to Ecclesiastes 3. And I don't know if I'll cry or not. I'm not typically a crier. And I'm not typically real emotional. And that's what really got to me with the menopause, because I'm not typically. I'm not saying I'm always even, but for the most part, I am. And so Ecclesiastes 3. To everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant, a time to pluck up that which is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down, a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to get and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to cast away, a time to rend and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love, a time to hate, a time of war and a time of peace. And I'm going to go that far with it. So God set in order seasons of life, you know, and every season has its good points, and a lot of seasons have low points, but because we're saved, all of those things can be a blessing. The times that we are like, can't this just end? You know, God teaches us from it. Okay, so I'm going to kind of give this. This is actually, if I go on and on, I don't want to go on and on, but I had a hard time getting prepared for this, especially after Anne told me what she wanted me to touch on, but we're not going to just talk about that. When I was back at home the last 2 years, Kathy Gipp teaches a class to our students, especially the gal students, the girl students, and especially those that think that someday they might be in the ministry. And so she asked me to teach a lesson on it, and I just said, well, my personal journey as a pastor's wife. I'm just going to give you some testimony things, and then we're going to go through, because you guys already said a lot of things about the ministry, and I may touch on some of them, but anyway, I just know how my life is, and I know how our church is. Your life is going to be totally different. Your life is going to be your story that God gives you, and I'm glad that God made all these different personalities. He made you be in the place you're in, that maybe you wouldn't be happy in Boise, but maybe I wouldn't be happy at your church. You know what I mean? Or a place that you can be used as God sees fit. God saved me when I was 17 years old. A friend from my public high school invited me to a Billy Graham crusade in downtown Chicago. Okay, now this girl, I always lived a pretty clean life. That's why my husband goes, you're never a sinner. You never sin. You know? And I'm like, he goes, tell me when you sin. Then I mention something and he laughs. And it's like, you know, because, well, anyway, his was really, really obvious, you know, as a teenager. Yeah, well, see, that's why I love you. I'm my husband for the same reason. Anyway, so I did get saved at Billy Graham Crusade, believe it or not, but he was actually preaching the gospel back in the 70s. And I had an uncle and an aunt and some cousins who kept witnessing to me and praying for me for years. My parents got divorced and they were not saved. I was raised in a very liberal congregational church, and I had very minimal knowledge of the Bible. Well, I was a baby Christian, and I had no direction in my life. But I ran into some people who got saved, and I attended a home Bible study. And the young couple that taught me were actually studying at Moody Bible Institute. And like I said, Moody Bible was a big deal, especially in Chicago. You know, you have Moody Books, you have Moody Radio, all this stuff. And they encouraged me to go to Moody as it was local, and I didn't know anything about the King James Bible, okay? I didn't know hide nor hair of it. I had expressed an interest in studying, and the study leader's sister would be attending that fall. So I jumped at the chance and was accepted to Moody, and I spent 2 years there, and I learned many things from my roommate. My roommate's family had been Mennonite at one time, and they started finding out more about the Bible, and they ended up going to a Baptist church. So my roommate Bonnie Troil was saved at a young age and helped me learn how to live the Christian life. I didn't know how to live the Christian life. Like I said, I was on the surface, you would think I was a real good kid, but there was a lot of habits and there was a lot of heart stuff that was going on with me that I didn't know what a Christian should do. And she didn't get shocked with me, you know. I mean, I was one that, at the time, I have ugly legs now because I had a knee replacement. I've got a great big scar. But at the time, I had legs. I was a swimmer. I was a swimmer, so I was toned up. I had, you know, that was my athletic thing. It was swimming. And I think I probably shocked Bonnie sometimes because I would pull out the clothes I was going to wear, and she'd kind of look at me like, Carol, and she'd be really nice, you know. She'd go, that might be a tad short, you know, because they did have Moody at the time. Now they wear pants to school, but then, you know, you could have it to the middle of your knee. Of course, everything I had was like up here, you know, so we had to go shopping. But anyway, she was very, very kind, and she had a lot of patience and grace with me, which I'm still very thankful for. But when I would go home 1 week a month from Moody, I started attending a Bible study and attending a Des Plaines Bible Church in my hometown. So long story short, I'm not going to go through all of this, but our pastor at that church believed the King James Bible. Now, he wasn't as much as like Ruckman, but that's the one he would use. And he wasn't a Baptist or anything, but he taught us all the basics. He taught us about eternal security, all of that. So I was prepared for that. And I would go to Moody, and the teachers there were good. It was a good place for me to be for a while to learn some things about my Bible. But we were using American Standard Bible. I had never read through it before, so I read through the whole Bible, even if it wasn't the right one. And I had a hard time because I didn't know all the stories. All these other kids were coming in, and they had been church kids their whole life. So I knew about Moses, and I think I knew about Moses, and I knew about David and Goliath and Adam and Eve. That's about it. And I was with all these kids that had been church kids their whole life. So I would stay up. I would go to the study hall. There was a study hall that was kind of like an attic. And nobody would be in there, and I would be in there and study until like 2 in the morning just to learn it, you know, because I wanted to know. I really wanted to know. It wasn't boring to me at all. Everything was exciting. And my roommate would tell me, Carol, don't you need to sleep sometimes? And I was getting good grades for me for there. I was getting B's, which is pretty good when you don't know anything. But I was sleep deprived. Anyway. So, but finally, I was just getting upset because here my pastor, who's in Des Plaines, and I would go back and forth once in a while to hear the messages from Chicago to there, And he was telling us about the King James, and everything we were reading there was King James, and everything we were reading at Moody was American Standard Bible. And not only that, but the professors would start criticizing the King James and start, you know, and they were taking verses. I would compare one verse that was in my Bible that was King James and then the other, and the other one, King James had the blood in it, and the other one was missing. And then they'd switch, you know what they do. They take out whole verses. And I was starting to wonder. And some of the kids from Des Plaines Bible Church got a hold of Dr. Reckman's stuff, and I started reading it, and so I ended up going down there along with several kids. And some of you that are from our church know the Burchards and the Walskis and several other people that went down there. It was at the same time. So we went to PBI for the whole time. And I was really thankful because I was finally learning some Bible and I could trust my Bible, that it was the one to listen to. It was the one to read. I met a tall, handsome young man with dark, wavy hair. He doesn't have as much hair now. And it was very dark. He was, he still is Italian. So I was very, and so my name's Italian. But he was raised Roman Catholic. But he took a very bold stand with his family that had been in the Catholic Church since eons. I mean, all the way back to Italy, all the way back to Rome. You know, so here we are, and I was raised Protestant, but lost. But we both went to Moody, to PBI. So we were married 6 months later in 1976, and we had our first child, Katie, in 1977. And when we were done, everybody was going, well, what are you going to do in the ministry? And everybody's, you know, different people had all the ideas what they were going to do. Now, they didn't all do them. But some, I'm going to be a missionary in Bula Bula land. Well, I'm going to be the pastor of the largest church ever that believes the King James Bible. Or I'm going to be, you know, they all had their dreams. And they'd ask my husband, and he said, well, I really don't know what God wants me to do yet, but I'm going to go back to Chicago because we know an awful lot of lost people. And they're Catholic, and I know Catholics, so that's where I'm going. And we did. We did it for 2 years. And we helped a young pastor and his wife. Some of you might have known them, maybe not, Dave and Nancy Rowley. And we helped them get a church started. And they called it King James Bible Church. And a lot of people thought we were a black church. And a lot of people thought we were a lot of different things. And we said, no, no, this just, you know, we're talking about the King James. And we had a lot of experiences at that small church, some strange and some a blessing. It was in the middle of Chicago, and every kind of nice person and weirdo would walk in there. I'm not kidding, weird. Okay, it used to be a racetrack messenger service, and that was where people took bets on the racetrack horses. That's what was there before the church was there. It was very small. It was very run down. The nursery was right next to the chapel room, and all the walls were really, really thin. And it was a challenge to keep the kids quiet during the service. We were always happy when they were singing because, you know, when the chapel was singing. But we had to keep a few wild ones from escaping. We didn't have a very good door. So we, once in a while, you'd have some kid running down. Yeah, it was fun. And the only two nursery workers were the pastor's wife and me. Yeah, and there were other mothers there, but one of them told me, oh, I always get headaches when I'm in there, so I can't do that. You know, and I thought, well, your child is a headache. I didn't say that. I didn't say it. See, I'm blunt, but I know when to shut up sometimes. So I remember we would have church dinner on the grounds, okay? And I remember one lady had a large husband and several children, and she brought only an 8x8-inch pan of macaroni. That was her only contribution. And some of it was because they didn't know any better. They were first-time Christians. They didn't know any better. The only reason I knew better was because my husband's family was Italian, and you always had food. I mean, food. you know, and I was like about this thin, and his grandma kept telling me, you don't eat enough, Carol, you don't eat enough, and she'd stick like tortellines in front of me, and then their Thanksgivings were like about a 15-course dinner, and there were, I'm not kidding, and three main courses, and you're just going like, oh my word, you know. But anyway, I did learn that you better bring some food at those. So usually Nancy and I had to bring a lot of extra. I mean, like lots of meat. Nobody brought meat except us. So I'd bring chili and pulled pork and whatever, and sometimes several things. And usually the lady that brought the 8x8 dish, her family just devoured all of our meat. You know, but you know, I got people nodding their heads. Sometimes it takes a while for people to learn. They just honestly don't know. Some of them are lazy. Some of them don't have the money. Some of them don't know how to cook. You know, I mean, but it takes time to learn. So we were there for 2 years, and we learned numerous life lessons from attending and serving at that small church. Nancy was a good friend to me. She taught me many things about loving my husband and being a good wife. I didn't have a mother that was a real good wife, okay? And she was very critical, and very, I won't say I was raised horribly, because they took care of us good, and there were certain things that you couldn't do, you know, but as far as the love there, it was kind of weird. So I had to learn to love. I had to learn to trust. And Nancy helped me with that, because she was an excellent wife. She also taught me how to sew, so I perked up with you. And I needed it later because we didn't have very much money in our second church. So, you know, in order for our kids to be clothed, sometimes I just had to pull out the old sewing machine and learn. But she taught me how to mend. She taught me how to make economical things for my home and my children. So we were there 2 years, and in 1980, I was expecting our second child, Don, and we were happily working with the Rowleys. Preacher was making very good money, so he was helping out at the church, but he wasn't getting any pay. He just wanted to learn. He was making good money as a welder in the union in Chicago. He was at the Pipe Fitters and Welders Union. And we were around many friends and family and familiar territory. I was great with it. You know, I was a city girl. I was raised city. My mother was raised country, but I was raised city. And I was expecting Don in May. And all of a sudden, we get this letter in the mail, and it's weird because it was an anonymous handwritten letter from a confusing return address. The return address said it was from a town in Indiana, Pennsylvania. And I thought, which state?
Yeah.
Indiana, Pennsylvania, where's that? And so it turned out Indiana's the town, was a college town, and Pennsylvania was the state. And they were writing in there that they wanted a pastor, they had lost their pastor, and they wanted a pastor who believed the King James and who had attended PBI to come candidate for their little country church in Shalakta, where apparently Brother McGahee had told them to get a hold of my husband. So that's how it happened. And we took it. Well, not right away we didn't take it, because my husband told him, hey, my wife has to give birth to a baby, and I had had Katie premature, and so the doctor wouldn't let me fly. So, but Preacher went out there before him. I'm getting ahead of myself. Preacher went out there and candidated. When he arrived, he found out that this church had a history of church splits. Oh, that sounds good, doesn't it? I'm sure it was all the pastor's problem. And at that time, the attendance only averaged about 15 people. So he was leaving a job that at the time, in today's money, would have been $300,000 a year, you know, which for some people that's not much. But that was back in the 70s. Okay, most of the people were 60 and above. A couple of children now and then attended, and one of the deacons took the preacher around to survey the area. He was so much help. He showed the Civil War era that a church building was, and don't think plantation mansion. This is Civil War that It was just real basic, very basic building that was falling apart. It wasn't paid for, so it was still in debt. It had desperate need of repair. It had a small, muddy gravel parking lot, and being right, it was right above an active coal mine. So, because it was above an active coal mine, the small bathrooms had rusty, hard water that definitely smelled like sulfur. In fact, when you turned the faucet on, it bubbled like it was carbonated. I never drank from that. We brought our own water in. Then the same deacon proceeded to take him to the homes of several very grouchy, disgruntled people who were still in church but were not hesitant to grumble to my husband about the last pastor and his doubts about a new one. They were even voicing opinions about missionaries being moochinaries. So it was amazing. The whole thing looked pretty dismal. One older farm couple that he had visited had chickens and sheep. They were living out in the country. They were very sweet people, very sweet, but very rustic, okay? And they would let their animals run through the house. They had an outhouse. Now, you know, maybe like in the 1870s it would have been okay, but this was the 1970s. Okay, so they did not have running water. So anyway, I'm glad I wasn't there with him. God knew that I didn't need to be there. Yeah, because at the time I wasn't very mature and I would have just cried. I think here my husband finally had a really good job. We were poor in Pennsylvania, so we went from rags to riches, and now we're going back to rags. Okay, so, and be ready for that, you know, because you just don't know. Preacher preached for a small group that Sunday night, and then he went back to the same deacon's house, and they had him staying in an upward attic bedroom. And he had to spend the night there before flying back the next morning. We didn't know any friends, any family. We didn't know anybody there, okay? Not a single soul, not even the people that invited us there. He prayed that night to the Lord and told the Lord that he did not want to take this wreck of a church, but he would do it if the Lord wanted him to. Well, back, and we were only like in our 20s. We were really young. Not quite as young as you guys, but pretty close. We didn't know anybody there. Back home in Chicago, preacher prayed again urgently. He felt that in spite of the dismal outlook, the Lord wanted him to accept the pastorate if the church voted for him. And unfortunately, they did. I'm kidding. Not really. No, it was fortunate they did. Because you know what? We really learned lessons there that prepared us to go to Boise. We would not have been ready for Boise had it not been for Shalakta. And really, a lot of the people were good to us. I'm not trying to make it sound like all bad. I'm just telling you the preliminary. As soon as our son Don was 1 month old, because he every time it seemed like we had a baby, we moved. And as soon as we moved to Boise, we never had another baby. So I don't know. But as soon as Don was 1 month old, in June of 1980, we headed to Pennsylvania with our three-year-old Katie and our infant son Don in a U-Haul. We moved into our new home in Pennsylvania. We were in a single-wide 1960s-era mobile home. The trailer was old, but it was in a beautiful wooded area on 20 acres, complete with a private spring-fed pond. So it was a beautiful area. And oh my goodness, the thing I really miss in the fall anymore is those leaves. It was like a mirror on that pond. I mean, the only thing that was scary about the pond was I had a three-year-old and I had a one-year-old. Yeah. So you had to watch them like a hawk, you know. And we finally put a little fence out there because I just kept thinking, I'm going to find one of them floating on the top one day, you know. But God was good. We were okay. The deacon had met my husband, and he owned a property. Part of our salary was free rent there. And the weekend after we moved in, the church had a luau for us, complete with a roasted pig with an apple in its mouth. All this was done in a pit in our backyard. Well, really, that's considered very fancy. But we'd never been to Hawaii. I got all my food out of, you know, the grocery store. I had never seen a dead animal other than a cat on the road, you know, and I thought, we're going to eat this thing, you know. And you know how they look. They look all shriveled up. And, I mean, these people had given us one of their pigs and had, and I was so stupid. I was smart enough not to say anything to anybody. But I'm thinking, oh my word, we're going to eat this thing. It's got its head on, you know, an apple in its mouth. I mean, I was really ignorant of anything like that. And I whispered that to my husband. But we learned so many things about the pastor in that church, so many different personalities in that church. And you know, when you're in a church, you're going to have all kinds of people, like Ann was talking about. You're going to have everything. And even in this little church we did, preachers spent many hours and weeks doing door-to-door visitation. We did not have a TV. We couldn't. It wasn't even out of conviction. We were in the woods, and somebody finally gave us one. You couldn't get any reception. One day, my husband wanted to watch a hockey game, and this was our antenna. Okay, so we had a telephone pole right next to the trailer, and my husband rung a wire up in this little thing, and that was our reception. It was very snowy. So our kids never watched much TV, hardly at all. So my son, Don, who is now a dentist, and he has like several degrees in engineering and everything else, and this is who I attribute to, is he hardly ever watched TV when he was little. So his entertainment was reading or having you read him a book. So he loved books, and he would have you read them one after another after another. He could almost tell you all the words in the books. I had a stack this high. And we had a babysitter come over one time. And when we came home from what we were doing, she was hoarse. And she just went, "Oh, your son, he's very well behaved, but he sure likes to have you read to him." And it ended up, when I homeschooled him, you know what he did for fun? He read a 1960s old encyclopedia. That was his entertainment. And that's even after we had a TV. So, you know, it's, anyway. The trailer had a few oddities. The extra room that the farmer had built on, it became our bedroom. And he wasn't a very good builder. You know how farmers use a lot of baling wire for stuff and duct tape? Well, that was him. he was very cheap. it had a slanted roof, which was fine, but it leaked, and it also had a slanted floor. The kids liked it. They could roll a ball down it.
Yeah.
And because it had a slanted roof and it leaked, it was right over our head in our bed where the leak was, and it rained a lot in Pennsylvania. So we didn't know what to do. My husband was a welder. He wasn't a roofer. And he was only in his 20s, so we thought, we got to fix this somehow. So we got an old metal ice cube tray and taped it to the ceiling right above our head. And as long as you got to it before it got full, you were okay. But if you didn't get to it before you were full, wet head, you would get doused. All the hard work paid off, though, from my husband. He spent many hours going on all these rural drives. They were all gravel, very bumpy drives. And he would knock out doors, and he witnessed to people. But many of them got saved under his ministry, or they would start coming to church. And so all the work paid off. Our little church grew. We went from 15 disgruntled people to, 4 years later, 125. And that's in a little tiny town. So, you know, my husband was very good about talking to people, and he just had this, I want to say charisma almost. He just was good with people. And it was real. It wasn't pretend. And he knew his Bible. That's what I'm thankful about PBI. Well, we didn't get a lot of training on church stuff, which was hard because I hadn't been in one much other than, you know, the chapel. But we knew our Bible. So, but God supplied. We made so little money in those 4 years. When our taxes were done, the lady who helped us prepare them could not understand how we could exist. But God supplied. The farm couple that had the chickens and the animals that ran through their house, very sweet. I mean, I love them to pieces. I'm not running them down. That's just the way they were, you know. But they were very, very kind. The farm couple gave us free eggs. And this was a funny story, too. We didn't know. This is before we know they were going to give it to us every Sunday night. Our parking lot was very, very dark. It was very dark, and it was the kind of place that you didn't, it was such a little town, you never locked your doors. In fact, we got made so much fun of because we were locked things all the time because we were from Chicago. Yeah. You lock everything. Yeah. We were in the suburbs in Chicago, and that's back in the 70s, and we were still, you lock everything twice. My husband's grandmother, who died at 106, she lived by herself in the suburbs, and she had, this just to give you an example, she had a door, and she lived by herself. She had four or five bolts and then an extra lock on her front door, you know, because she's lived by herself. She's old. But we were kind of that mindset, but we were starting to get over it, and we weren't locking our car door. Well, these people stuck, I think it was two or three dozen eggs, farm fresh with the feathers still on it. They were wonderful eggs, or they would have been. But my husband got in the car. We had no idea it was on his front seat. Oh, no. You know, so he just plopped himself in there, and we had omelets. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So anyway, we asked them, we thanked them for the eggs, and we felt real shy about telling them about it. But we said, you know what? Can you let us know? And he had a flashlight, too, and we'd go out. So one family gave us an entire butchered and wrapped deer meat for meat. They had lots of acreage, and in Pennsylvania, they were allowed to shoot several deer depending on how many acres you had for controlling crop damage, because those deer could eat everything. Others gave us produce from their garden, and one lady taught me how to can. And that came in so, so handy. I had no idea how to can. In fact, all my friends in Chicago would say, don't eat home canned food, you're going to die. You know, and I'm like, oh, no, and that's what they're giving me, you know. And so, but we're starving. So anyway, it was a great skill that I've used to this day, and I garden now, too. And we live on 10 acres because we got used to living in the country, and we didn't like living in the city anymore. We lived 1 year in Boise in the city, and after that, we looked for land. The deacon who let us live in the trailer also gave us free natural gas for any homes on his property. He would get free gas, free natural gas. So everything in our trailer was natural gas. My dryer, well, not the refrigerator, my oven, you know, everything. Anything we could get natural gas, we would. So there were some perks, you know, and you have to look at those kind of things, because if you just think, had the city mindset, it didn't work out there. But it was fine for us there. The preacher hunted, my husband hunted deer and squirrel himself, including some frogs from our pond. I did not eat the frogs. We had frogs on this pond that they all had a musical tune, and one of them would go, I can't make it exactly, and one would go, bang, 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 bang. And the other one, if you would walk past him, it was, and he did this every time. So it's like, you know, at first it sounded like he was surprised, like, you know, he would walk past him and he'd jump in the pond and go, wah! So, oh, I know, and then there was another one that went, ooh-lulu, ooh-lulu, ooh-lulu. We said Lulu was his girlfriend. So my husband's dad, who is a hunter, came out. He kills everything. I mean, if it's living, he wants to kill it. And we're like, Dad, you know, and he liked frogs. He really liked to do frogs. And I didn't mind cooking the squirrel. I ate part of it, and I said, that's the end of it. I like deer very much. I love deer. I'd rather have deer than beef. And especially the ones there, because they steal out of the farmer's orchards, and so they taste good. And but the frogs. So my father-in-law shot a frog. I know this is really spiritual. My father-in-law shot a frog, and I thought, they're going to expect me to cook this. But my mother-in-law was there, and she cooks anything he cooks, he gets. So I said, I'm not going to eat it, and I'm sure not going to cook it. So he said, these are a delicacy. You can have all the delicacy you want. And guess which one he killed on our pond? It was Lulu. Yes, and I went to sleep with Lulu. We'd open up our windows. We had no air conditioning, and I'd hear that serenade at night. Ulululu, ulululu, ulululu. So I knew which one he killed. It was no more Lulu. Anyway, so it was culture shock when we were there. This is the funniest of that. And no, I'll tell you too. Are you getting bored with these? Okay, so culture shock. Second year we were there, a lady gave me some pressure canned venison meat in a mason jar. If I had known anything, I would have known that was a sacrifice and that that was the most wonderful meat in the world. But do you remember what I thought about canned meat? Yeah. And I thought, well, I'm getting over the vegetables. Those are okay. You know, those are okay. But I don't think you can can meat. You know, you're going to get botulism for sure. And, you know, have you ever seen canned meat in a jar? Most of you had. Yeah, you weren't as ignorant as me. And it looks like, to me, it looked like a science project floating in formaldehyde. Yeah. So, because I had seen those in the lab when I was in high school. It'd be, you know. So that's what I thought it was. So, and I told you, we didn't have that much food unless somebody brought things to us. I said thank you to her, very nice, and I said it to myself, not intending to ever use it. But later, when our cupboards were bare, I had to call her because everything was bare and there was only me in the can and a little bit of rice. That's all it was. And I had to get over this. I know it's funny, but it's like I really was wondering. And I had to call her and say, I'm sorry. I said, I was just afraid of it. I don't know how to make this. And she started laughing. And she goes, Carol, it's the easiest thing in the world. And she told me, you dump it in a pan, and you make a little gravy out of the juice, and then you put it on rice or noodles or whatever you want, and it's great. Well, we had it. That was the best meal I'd ever had. That was the most tender, wonderful meat I'd ever had. But see, I was afraid. I didn't know. I needed somebody to teach me. So here I was. I thought I was going to teach all these people stuff because I was from Chicago. I know everything. And, yeah, I'm embarrassed about it anymore. But I think God was so good to me, and I loved it so much. But the other story is there was two little red-headed, freckle-faced kids that used to come to church. They lived across the street. The grandma wouldn't come, but she always sent the kids, and she would send them with some little Sunday school offering money. Well, the little girl was older than the little boy, and she announced that she had a quarter for the offering and then continued that her brother had a nickel, but she brought it for him because grandma said she had to because last week he swallowed his. I thought, he's still alive. It probably passed. You know, anyway. We had many more stories, many more things we had to learn to deal with and show grace, and they had to show grace to us. Discipline. God used so many situations to teach us to work with people and to love them and to learn how to learn from them. They were smarter than us. They were in our 60s. We were in our 20s. I know my husband knew that. Now, there were certain things that he just, well, one of the things is when we first came there, he had a deacon's meeting, and that church was upside down on what they should be doing with men and women as far as that goes. You were talking about, you know, you don't tell everybody everything. Well, these men came in. They were going to make some decisions with my husband. This is when we first got there. And apparently, these deacons would go home and tell their wives everything, and then the wives would help them decide. So they were going to make just a couple of different decisions, simple decisions, about what to do. And the wife said, or the deacon said, we can't do this. We have to go home and talk to our wives first. I mean, it was real obvious. You think they'd hide that, but they didn't. It was just obvious. That's what we do here. And my husband said, I think we need to go over a few things. And so they got used to it. There was one lady that basically left the church over it because, you know, she was in charge. But anyway, and then it was amazing. After she left, she thought everybody was going to just, am I going over time? No. I'm still going to hit what you want me to. So, okay. So, all right. So I'm going to talk about the change of life. I would say if you are young yet and you have not gone through any of this and you're not prepared, there's so much internet stuff anymore. You can find out almost everything you want. But there was no internet back then. And my mother didn't tell me anything. And I was busy homeschooling. I was a busy mom. And I went through this early. I went through menopause early. I was like only 42. So I was shocked. I was shocked. And I thought, I'm going to do all this natural. I'm just going to take my creams. And that does work for people, but not for me. And I was mad about it. I was upset. Here I am this young. I thought, you know, you're going to be 60 before this happens. Well, you don't. It starts a lot of times in your 40s, maybe even your 30s. And it can go on for a long time, some of the things. Mine, I had some hot flashes, some other things, but mine mostly was an emotional roller coaster. And I am not a real emotional person, not typically. And I just freaked out. I mean, everything. What I told my husband, I said, it felt like in the morning, I'm doing all right, and I'm going up the elevator, I'm okay, I'm on the top, and then, poof, it just felt like you had a drop. Every day, your emotions and your everything would just drop. And it was so hard on my kids, because here I am trying to be a nice mom, and I'm turning into Wanda the Wicked Witch of the West, you know. And I didn't want to be. I didn't want to be. And I'd pray, and I'd ask the Lord, please help me. I can't help this. And my husband didn't know what to do. You know, he wasn't used to me going, meow! And then, I'm sorry, I went, meow! Anyway, be prepared for it. You may not have hardly any symptoms at all. Some people breeze right through it. I didn't have that many hot flashes. I didn't have a lot of other things. You won't have such an easy time making love, you know, and you may have to get some things to help you with that. I eventually went to my doctor, and I did get hormone replacement, and actually within 2 days I felt better. My husband said, you're the same woman I knew that I married, yeah. You know, instead of Wanda. So, but I hope nobody's Wanda here. But anyway, your estrogen will slowly go down. Mine, I think, was going down, didn't know it. And then you'll be 12 months without a period. And then they say you're in menopause. And eventually it does level out. In post-menopause right now, I'm feeling great other than I'm an old lady, you know, and I get replacements of knees and other things. But, you know, I'm doing well, and it's not the end of your life. I read a story one time about an Amish lady. You know, Amish people like to make quilts, beautiful quilts. And this lady was a huge quilter. And when she went through menopause, she was so depressed because she always had lots of kids and loved having lots of kids, and she found out she couldn't have any more. And she dyed her quilts black out of depression, you know, so don't be that lady. Get some help, whatever it is. Talk to other people that have been through it. You know, I wish somebody would have said something to me, but it's like the subject nobody wants to talk about because they think, oh, no, I have menopause, and I'm an old lady, and I'm going to die next week because I'm old. You know, you don't. My husband's grandma was the sweetest lady on earth, I think, and she was a lost Catholic for the longest time. She got saved at 104. 104. Wow. Don't give up on your relatives. 104. Most devout Catholic and a real one. I mean, she really was. And sweetest lady you'd ever want to meet in your life. And I thought, but she probably went through it. I wonder if she was Wanda then. And then she got nice. But anyway, I'm going on a long time. I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, well, Grandma Dabrowski, when she was younger, when the kids would come over, if they didn't behave, she had lots of grandkids. And she had this, like, it was almost like a cat of nine tails without all the things on it. She had a strap that had all these leather pieces on it, and she'd go, okay, now if you kids don't behave, I'm going to bring out, she called it Dancing Sally, and then she'd go like this, I'm going to get you with Dancing Sally. Yeah, but she got saved in 100, and what did I say, 104. She lived by herself many, many years after her husband died, was a widow for a long time, very, very sweet. You go to her house, she'd always have candy for the kids, and just a sweet lady, very content, That's what I would say. I always wonder, why did she live so long? She was content. And I think God wanted to save her. I think he wanted to save her just for us, because we'd been praying. My husband's mom got saved. His brother got saved. His dad got saved. These were all devout Roman Catholics. And anyway, so Grandma Dombrowski finally just got to the point where she couldn't live on her own, and her kids were too old to take care of her. And so she went to a nursing home, a very nice one. But she ended up in a nursing home, and she didn't want to be there at first. But then she made a lot of friends, and she started going to every chapel there was. I think if it was a Buddhist chapel, she would have gone there. It was all of them just because of the social thing. She went to a Baptist chapel, and she started hearing the gospel. And she said, well, that's what Ricky believes. That's what she called him until she died, was Ricky. That was what Ricky believes. And she got saved. So we were rejoicing and rejoicing. And she was doing really well. My granddaughter, who at the time was 8, and I would call her on the phone, and we would sing hymns to her. We'd sing little songs. And she loved that. And my granddaughter would send her pictures, and she'd put it up in her room. Well, then there was COVID in the 2020. And I'm just so thankful. I'm so thankful that she got saved 2 years before COVID. And it was a very kind of a high-class place. It was in Barrington Hills, Illinois. If you know anything about it, that's a fancy place. And, you know, they were very careful with their patients in there. They didn't even let my husband's aunt in, who's her daughter, come in and talk to her. She would have to stand. It was a lower window like that, and she'd have to stand there and put notes out there for her, or pictures or whatever, and talk to her that way. But one day, a worker came in and didn't know she had COVID, and it spread throughout the whole thing, and it killed 10 patients. So it was bad, and I'm sure that poor nurse had no idea that was because of that. But anyway, I'm rejoicing because she got saved, and I'm rejoicing because she taught me something, too, to be content. She did not have a fun husband. Her husband was not saved. He took care of them well. He never beat them, but he was a grouch. I mean, my husband used to call him Grouchy Grandpa when he was still alive, when he was little. My husband was little then. And his other grandpa, his Italian one, was the sweetest thing on earth. But, you know, I don't know. I'm going all over the place. I told you I was going to. But I did cover what you asked me to. I'm just saying, get help if you need it. Don't be afraid to get help, and don't be afraid to talk. I think us women don't talk about things a lot, especially stuff that we consider distasteful. But it's going to happen to you. Whether you like it or not, it's going to happen. But we don't have to make it a horrible thing. We don't have to.
Would you, out of curiosity, would you say during that emotional time you were more paranoid or skeptical, or you were just like, I'm going to eat you for lunch?
All three. It depended on the moment.
Okay. So
and I'm trying to teach my kids, and they're looking at me. My husband had to explain me to the kids. He had to take them together and explain me. Because they're like, my sweet mother just turned into Wanda the Witch. But, you know, I mean, I didn't have any patience with the kids, and I thought, I'm going to have to quit homeschooling. But I got through it, and like I said, I got a son that's, you know, I mean, he's naturally a brainiac. And then my two daughters are mothers, and they both homeschool, so they didn't have too bad a taste in it over that. But you got to get help. Don't just let it keep going where you don't find some kind of help, and ask God to help you. I know I was on my knees every single day with that, because I'd do something, I'd snap at somebody, and then I'd go, man, I don't want to do that. They're going to hate me. They're going to hate the church. They're going to hate God. They're going to hate everybody. You know, it's natural. It's very natural, but don't let it go. Just don't let it go, because you don't want to lose those important relationships. They're the most important in your life. You don't want to lose them. So, anyway, did I do okay on that? I don't want to go through the whole thing. I got this chart. I was going to go through it, and I'm like, you can find this on the internet. You know, and see how it's like a roller coaster? And then at the end, after a while, you even out. So if you're going through a roller coaster, you don't have to take the ride forever.
It's just hard to tell, like, are you really freaking out, or is it really life that's freaking you out?
It's both. It's both sometimes, you know? I mean, it's, and we're emotional anyway, and I was not a real emotional person. Like I said, I tend to be almost like, you know, my husband can be more emotional. He's Italian. I'm English and Scottish. I guess the Scottish can get mad, but the English in me kind of like, ho-hum, that's boring. You know, my food's even boring compared to his. Anyway, oh, were we supposed to?